Hello and welcome back to Chasing Perfection, a UConn women's basketball podcast. We are here in Phoenix ahead of the Final Four. The Huskies punched their ticket through the Fort Worth 1 regional with gritty, tough wins over UNC and Notre Dame in the Sweet 16 and Elite 8, respectively. Nothing about last weekend was particularly pretty, was particularly easy. Really, it was just, for UConn standards, it was two rock fights in a row. Both games really felt pretty similar in that in neither of them, there was never a point where it felt like UConn was really in danger of losing. I think, was it Sarah that just skirted with four fouls? Yeah, Sarah had three fouls for a good chunk of the second half, and there were at least like four different plays where she either could have been called for one but wasn't. She was in the vicinity of a foul and they didn't give it to her, or a few things like that. That probably would have been the closest thing, but even at that point, it would have taken a lot for UConn to go down. How do you feel about this team going through that weekend where it was pretty much the most atypical weekend of the entire season? At the same time, despite all that weirdness, they found ways to win. Like, I thought UNC was pretty impressive and just, like, they just had no offense. They didn't have the talent to keep up with UConn. And Notre Dame was very clearly a much better team than when we saw them a month and a half, 2 months ago. So, yeah, just what did you think of UConn this weekend and going forward?
I feel like I have mixed feelings on it because on one hand, right, like, they couldn't find their offense really at all. It felt like this past weekend, and there was definitely just some things that didn't look very pretty. The defense was fantastic. Like, I don't think you can say enough about how good their defense has been, I mean, all season, but especially last weekend. But they really struggled on offense in ways that maybe we really haven't seen before. I don't know. It just felt like, even things like, it felt like AZ wasn't necessarily looking for her shot at times, and just, like, things were just ugly. So that makes you feel, I think, a little less confident going into the Final Four, because it's not like they just did what they did to Syracuse, to two more teams, and blew the brakes off of everyone. At the same time, they didn't really play great on the offensive end and still beat two really good teams by nearly 20 points. So it's like, it's hard to say how you feel, I feel like, because on one side, yeah, you would rather see them. Like, you would rather see them have had a weekend like Texas, where Texas, like, clearly played its best basketball this weekend and, like, with never any doubt from, like, opening tip that they were going to win those games. But at the same time, like, to win them in the fashion that they did with everything that went wrong, I think is also really impressive and shows that there's a lot of margin for error for this team. And that obviously decreases going into this weekend, but it's there still.
The offense was just really weird to me. It wasn't that they weren't making shots, which I think I chalk up a little bit to, we'll get into, the rims and the balls. Against UNC, they were rushing their offense so much. They were taking such bad shots. They were taking contested looks. They were, like, they'd come up over half court, and with, like, 26 seconds left, they would settle for this contested long two with a defender in their face that from the minute it left their hands, you knew had no chance of going in. It made no sense. And then against Notre Dame, they just couldn't get their offense going. I think some of that was Notre Dame was doing a really good job defensively of clogging them up. But it was also just missed passes, and it looked like they were out of sync more than anything. So is that a credit to UNC and Notre Dame for the defensive job that they did, is that UConn wasn't executing what it did? Because UConn went into halftime against Notre Dame, and I kind of throw the shooting out the window. If we're just talking about how the offense looked, that first set they had out of halftime, far and wide their best of the game at that point. The ball was moving, the players were really looking fluid, and I don't think they got a basket off it, or maybe they did, but like, that part doesn't really matter. And the rest of the game, I thought the offense was doing a whole lot better, and they were missing wide open shots. They had a lot of wide open chances. So the half court offense has been an issue, and I kind of say issue in air quotes, but it's been something Gino's pointed to all season long. Like, we got to get this better. This is what can take us from being a really good team into an elite team. They have two games left. I don't really know if they're going to get there, but as you said, they show that they can win this type of game, but it just becomes a lot tighter when you're playing South Carolina or UCLA or Texas if you get there, as opposed to a UNC team that, as we've talked about, historically never really has offense, and a Notre Dame team that really had nothing else beyond Hannah Hidalgo.
Yeah, I think as you get to this weekend, right, you've got a lot of teams that have a lot of weapons, so it's a little bit of a different situation. It doesn't mean that, like, if they don't have great offense, they can't win these games. They absolutely can. Like, their defense is fantastic. But the margin for error just shrinks, as it always does, right? Like, it's largest the first weekend, and it shrinks some the second weekend, and then it shrinks even more the Final Four weekend, and that's how that works. But you're right, at the same time, like, it did kind of figure itself out by the end of that Notre Dame game, and it just felt, like, uncharacteristic. So maybe, like, it just, like, was an off weekend, and it comes back to you, like, they get here, you had a little bit of a break, they hopefully have a little bit more of a normal routine compared to, like, the two-site regional here, and maybe that fixes everything.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the two-site regional in the context of Gino went off before the Elite Eight game, complaining about the schedule, and I say complaining, like, justifiably complaining about the schedule, because I think their shoot-around before Notre Dame, or before UNC? Yeah, it was before UNC, was 5:30 in the morning, and they got on the court for a half hour. They had to practice, I'm sorry, they had to be at the arena at 9:30, I think it was. Notre Dame had to be there at 8:30, despite their practices being later in the afternoon. And overall, they just didn't have enough time on the court. And one of the things that Gino pointed to was he said that they brought in new baskets and new balls, and the rims were extra tight, the basket balls were extra bouncy. I wonder if it's maybe just a product of Fort Worth or Dickies Arena doesn't host a ton of basketball, so maybe they're not new rims, but they're not particularly broken in, and maybe they overinflated the balls. I kind of believe him on that front, because I think it's unusual for Gino to complain about something like that. He's not one to make excuses, really, ever. So for him to point to that multiple times, there was even a moment, I was sitting directly behind him for both games, and there was a moment where I think it was AZ, but it could have been anyone, went up for a layup and the ball kind of rattled in and then went out, and Gino turned to who I assume is a NCAA rep, he turned to someone on the scorer's table and said something along the lines of, like, man, you really did it with these balls and rims. And then he kind of went, like, bounce, 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 with, like, his hand as he walked up the floor. Everyone shot badly in Fort Worth. It's not like UConn was an outlier. So I do wonder if that maybe might be a lot more of an issue. And if UConn just got, what, 4 more three-pointers to fall overall, we'd be feeling a lot better. Yeah. But on the other side of that, 3 of their 4 worst shooting performances of the season have come during the NCAA tournament. Louisville in the season opener was number 1. UNC was number 2. This is 3-point percentage I'm talking about. UTSA was number 3, and then Notre Dame was number 4. So if the UTSA game didn't happen and these UNC and Notre Dame games were just sitting on their own, I think I would be much more likely to say, okay, the rims were messed up, they're going to be fine here in Phoenix. The fact that UTSA is in there too just gives me a little bit of pause. I'm not saying they're going to shoot 20% in this Final Four, but I don't think the rims and the basketballs are the only reason that they weren't good.
Yeah, that's fair. I do tend to agree with him a little bit about the rims and the basketballs too, because, like you said, everyone shot poorly. And then I also think it could just be, like, not having enough time on the court, right? You're in a new arena. You don't have the proper setup for shoot around for practicing, and, like, that could contribute to poor shooting too. But then on the flip side about, like, the poor shooting, I feel like almost like law of averages says, like, it should probably just get better this weekend, because, like, they've shot the ball pretty well all season, so, like, it should come back around. And that UTSA game too, like, yeah, they shot the ball poorly, but, like, AZ also spent, what, 70% of that game on the bench. or like that factors into poor 3-point shooting for sure.
And they hadn't played in, what, 12 days prior to that. So you can write that one off, too. But 3 out of 4 going into the final four.
It's a little weird.
But on the flip side, the defense was really good, as you mentioned. And I think what's really noticeable is they basically didn't press this weekend. Maybe they'd send KK Arnold out there just to slow the ball handler up. But we weren't seeing that full court, high-intensity press that they've basically deployed for almost every defensive possession this year. It's not like that's been a sometime thing. That has basically been every single game. And I find it really bizarre, and I can't really think of an explanation because they've already played Notre Dame once. So we've seen that it can work against them. Maybe you just go into this Notre Dame game saying, Hannah Hidalgo is the only one that can kill you. So don't even give her the chance to do it. Sit back, defend her really well, which they did. She had 20-something points, but they made life really miserable for her. I thought they did a really good job. She got a lot of friendly whistles, I thought, on and ones, which added to her point total. I can understand that one a little bit. I don't really get it against UNC, unless the argument is, well, UNC can't score 40 against us. And we're going to score more than 40, so may as well just ensure that our press doesn't break. But you've relied on it so much this season to then rely on a style of defense that you haven't really used a whole lot is a little strange. And yet at the same time, it's kind of a credit to the team and the players that they were so good and they were so locked down. So I'm very curious to see if it returns this weekend, or is it something that the coaching staff feels they're not going to be able to, like, doesn't give them the best chance to win against these big teams, these top teams. I think we will find out on Friday night, but it's very eyebrow raising to me.
Yeah, and I wondered too, to an extent, like, does that have something to do with, like, the offense that we saw this weekend? Because I feel like this team talks all the time about, like, how they feed off the defense and the press and, like, getting out in transition and seeing them going in then turns into, like, the half court getting better. So when you take that away, does that throw the offense out of sorts in a way too? Because you just, like, you don't have those easy baskets necessarily, and like it's just like the intensity step off. Not that they stepped off the intensity, because their defense was extremely intense just in the half court instead of a full length of the court. And I wonder if that just threw things off offensively too. I would be surprised if they didn't bring it back this weekend, but I feel like it's probably a confidence boost to have not done it in the regional round and still won, because you, like, if you play South Carolina or whoever you play, if you get to a national championship and, like, they're easily breaking the press and you can't use it, like a UCLA, I think, is a great example of a team that might not work against, because you've got experienced guards there. They're going to know how to break press, and then you're leaving an opportunity for, like, bets to be too easy to get to in the post. And then you know you have this other defense in your back pocket that will work just as well, because it worked fantastic this weekend.
I don't think this is true, because nobody is more anxious. Nobody is more, what's the word I'm looking for? No one catastrophizes more than Gino, to where he would go, look, we can beat both of these teams straight up. Why don't we make it harder on ourselves? Test out this defense, give our half court a real long time out there. I don't really think that they would mess with that in the regional rounds, but I did kind of have that thought, like, are they almost making it intentionally harder on themselves? But I don't really think that one passes the sniff test. And your point about the press turning into offense, yeah, that's a big part of why the offense wasn't as good this weekend. And with UCLA, if they do see UCLA, we're going to get the exact same defensive game plan as last year, right? Like,
absolutely.
Why would you change it? It's not going to work as well this year, because the odds that Hawkes, I can never say her name.
Yeah,
Hawkes. I always overthink it in my head. Hawkes and their guards aren't going to shoot 0 for a million. And Lauren Betts is, in theory, like, probably going to have a little bit of a better game, because that was a game of Jana's life. We haven't seen Sarah Williams go against her. You play that one straight up, but you roll out basically the same idea. Yeah.
Sarah Williams has played against her, though, right?
Oh, that's actually a good point. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I didn't think of that. She hasn't played against them at UConn.
But like, yeah, like she hasn't played them at UConn, but like she has had that experience, which could help them anyway.
Yeah.
Besides the point.
That's a good point. So, yeah, I really can't wrap my head. And actually, to the similar point, Gino said the second half against Syracuse, they weren't that good offensively because they called the press off, and that kind of threw a wrench in what they're used to doing. So did they maybe see that and go, okay, well, we know if we get to the Final Four, we can't rely on the press, so let's make sure we're good without it. But I still just don't think they're going to pull something like that in regionals.
I agree. I think they would have done it in practice, but like I can't see him going to a regional game and being like, yes, we're going to make this harder for ourselves because like, what if they lost? Like, I just, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that doesn't pass the sniff test with Gino.
Yeah, I was fairly confident. Not fairly. I was fully confident they were going to go to Phoenix. He does not think like I do. I think, look at all these things that they've done over the years. You can kind of assume X, Y, Z. His brain is generally, well, we've done all of these things before that has nothing to do with this year's team. And I am almost always right. But that doesn't mean his thinking is ever going to change.
Right. It is odd. But it worked. I guess that's all that really matters is it worked. And they're here.
Yeah. Yeah. The one other big thing I wanted to talk about from Fort Worth was against UNC. It wasn't a great first half. They come out and have a big run to open the second half that really kind of put the game away. Afterwards, we're talking with the players and, you know, who stepped up, who talked. And I actually forget which player mentioned it, but they were like, Sarah did it. And on the surface, okay, that makes sense. As quiet as she is, as much as her personality is such that she's not going to be a rah-rah leader, get in your face, she's this team's best player. And you kind of expect that out of your best player, even if she is a sophomore. But then we go to Sarah and we ask her, when was the first time you felt comfortable speaking up in the locker room? And she goes, literally today. Then we saw that, was it during the second? I think it was during the second quarter. She took over for a very brief stretch where I distinctly remember she had made two straight baskets. And on the third, she gets the ball. She starts to dribble. It's not really there. She passes it to KK and she's kind of standing there as if to tell KK, you're just going to give me this ball right back and I'm going to go score. She gets it. And Sarah does not look anywhere except her defender in the basket. That is all she's focused on. There are no other players on the floor. And she dribbles. She gets a little space. She pulls up. She hits a jumper. And it was one of the first times I've ever seen that look in Sarah Strong's eye where I am going to take over this game. And it didn't last very long. She ended up having a really nice second quarter, but that absolute takeover mentality, that was new. So I think that's very promising. It's something that ideally you see a little bit more of this weekend. And I don't think Sarah Strong has played her best basketball really in the last month and a half, or actually 2 months now. We're in April. And not that she's been bad, but I think there's another level she can hit in the Final Four, and I would love to see that version of her come out more against South Carolina and if they get through against UCLA or Texas.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the next step for her, right? It's like she is the best player in the country, but she has to, like, sometimes in those moments where, like, you kind of need that, she's got to be the player that's just like, I'm going to go score now and, like, take over the game. And we saw it, like you said, in a flash there against UNC. But, like, there's probably a place this weekend where they need that. And if she can do that, I think that's going to be huge. And if you can see it a couple times this weekend, I think that's probably what wins UConn a national title. And then if that can blossom next year, like, she's only going to get better.
Yeah. Also, we can't go through the regional recap and not talk about Blanca Quiñones, because both teams did a really good job of slowing down Sarah. Both teams did a pretty good job of bottling up AZ, and neither team had any answers for Blanca. And Blanca was more than happy to step up into that void. She just played downhill the entire weekend, where there was nothing stopping her from getting to the basket. There was nothing running through her head about, oh my God, this is my first Sweet 16 Elite Eight. I wonder if it almost benefits her that, like, she understands this is a big time of year. But she said early in the tournament that her experience with March Madness is that one of her American teammates in Italy would turn it on like her computer or her phone, and Blanca would just kind of inch over and watch with her. It's not like Blanca has been through this tournament as a fan, has experienced every single level. It's all kind of new to her, and I think all she understands is, well, we got to win. So she's already very unique as a freshman, but she has been such a major X factor, and I think will continue to be, because I think South Carolina's got some defensive pieces that are going to make it tough for AZ, that are going to make it tough for Sarah. Do they then also have an answer for Blanca and anyone else who might be there?
Yeah, exactly. I think Jana talked about it a little bit, kind of saying how she's just like so fearless, and like it's probably part of it is she just like the weight of, not that she doesn't understand the weight of these games, but like the like concept of like March Madness and like everything that is in the States probably doesn't totally dawn on her. And that's probably a good thing, right? You just like, you aren't all stressed out about what this tournament is, and you're just there to go win. And she's been in situations where like you're in win or go home situations. She understands that and is able to just kind of know what she needs to do and go out there and know what she needs to do. But she's just been so good through the start of the tournament. I think she scored 15 plus points in every game. Like, she just had a great stretch here, and it's kind of been the X factor for them. And if it continues into this weekend, I think it's going to be the X factor for them there as well. It's like, you've kind of gone from, you have Sarah and AZ and KK and everyone else to like, you now have a third star on this team.
Yeah. I feel pretty good that you're going to get 20 points out of Sarah Strong. She's been pretty good for that in the tournament. AZ didn't play great in the regionals last year and was unbelievable in the final four. Right. So if history repeats itself, you've probably got 20 coming from her too. And then you're getting 15 just from Blanca, and three players get 55 points. You need 10 points, 15 points from everybody else to feel pretty good. And you need 25 points from everyone else to win in blowout fashion. It's a very good foundation to have. The thing is, as Gino has said, with Blanca, nothing carries over. So if she's had a bad game, that doesn't mean anything to the next game. But it also means if she's playing really well, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to continue.
That said, like, I mean, she's strung together four great games. Mm-hmm. So maybe she's catching on to something.
Yeah. We will see this weekend in Phoenix at, what is it, the Mortgage Matchup Center?
Yeah, the lamest name ever. Someone was asking bad me today when I was working my day job, like, what the arena was, and I was like, I don't know, and I had to look it up, and they were like, what? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. Bad name.
We got really lucky last year, because when the Final Four happened, Tampa's arena was Amalie Arena. Really nice name, just flows off the tongue. It is now Benchmark International Arena. That's a terrible name and would have been awful to have to talk about last year.
Yeah. So I keep wanting to call it Total Mortgage Arena because that's the short one. It basically sounds the same.
Same. I've been like doing the same thing in my head. It's difficult. So we have the exact same Final Four field as last year. Only the second time this has ever happened, exactly 30 years ago, was the other one, 95 into 96. UConn was a part of both of them. I think it's pretty clear now. It's been clear all season, but it's pretty clear now that these are the four best teams in the country. They have been the best four teams in the country, and now they have all proven that on the March stage. I mean, none of these teams really faced any sort of upset during the regionals. I mean, UCLA probably the closest, but even still, like, I think their games that like were tight at one point didn't end tight.
Yeah, I would say like the UCLA Duke game was probably the closest thing, but like you said, like as soon as they went ahead, they kind of ran away with it in that final quarter, or maybe not ran away with it, but like you didn't feel like they were gonna lose that game. And like second closest was probably like South Carolina TCU, I think, was an 8-point game going into the fourth quarter. And then they won by like 25, blew them out of the water in the fourth quarter. So nothing particularly close. And probably, I don't know, I thought Texas had the most impressive weekend of anyone in the regionals.
Yeah, so it'll be a national championship rematch for UConn taking on South Carolina. They didn't play this season for the first time in a long time, thanks to the Big East adding two extra games to its conference schedule for absolutely no reason. Just like totally unjustifiable that UConn loses. You know how valuable this game would have been to them? Because right. if we got to see UConn against South Carolina at any point in the calendar, we would be talking about this game, maybe not completely differently, but we would have a much better feel going into this game. Right. But since UConn has not played a team of this caliber, it's a big question mark. And I don't know who the Big East is appeasing by adding 20 games on its women's schedule, but shouldn't its entire existence at the moment benefit UConn because no one else is going to do anything worthwhile? So anyways, yeah, that's kind of the preview right there. First elite team that UConn has played this season. First time they're going to play each other. I was coming into the weekend, or maybe after UConn punched its ticket, I would have said they're the team that worries me the most simply because of Dawn Staley. They've got maybe a roster that doesn't go great for UConn defensively. My answer might be Texas now, just with how well Texas is playing. But either way, this is not a game that I think anyone should take lightly. This certainly feels like a game that South Carolina could pull off if it forces UConn into a bad shooting night. It really dominates down low. There's a formula here in a way that there wasn't for the teams UConn played last weekend.
Yeah, I agree. I think, one, like you said, because they just haven't played an elite team, it's really hard to understand like what it's going to look like against a South Carolina, like against a Texas or UCLA if they get there, because we just haven't seen it. And these teams are kind of above everyone else. So as much as you've played the Michigans and the Louisvilles and all these other really good teams, I think we saw exactly like everyone winning by 20 points last weekend, that like there's just a difference between these teams and those teams. I think the things that South Carolina does really well that are going to make UConn's life difficult is, I think Raven Johnson has been fantastic this year, and especially as a defender, and I'm guessing she's going to be on easy fun for most of the game, and I think that's going to make AZ's life very difficult in terms of getting the shots that she wants. It's going to be, I think, really hard for her to get, or Raven's going to make it really hard for her to get the looks that she wants. And then South Carolina obviously has size. Like, Okot transfer has been fantastic for them. And UConn's going to have to find a way to fight against that inside as well, even though, like, UConn has the size to match up with it. So it's not necessarily a problem, but, like, their bigs are going to get rebounds and stuff, and UConn's not going to have a clear advantage there the way they do against, like, a Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think what I worry about is South Carolina getting second chance opportunities. That 2022 national title game really sticks in my head. And I know it's completely different rosters, but the reason UConn lost that game was on the glass, because they couldn't get an offensive rebound to start the game, and they couldn't get an offensive rebound to start the second half. And you take away those, it was like 5 minute stretches and that game was even, but UConn just simply could not get the ball back, and South Carolina kept getting rebounds. So UConn is a better team than they were in 2022. South Carolina is probably not as good as they were in 2022, and UConn has a much better front court. On the flip side, if South Carolina is really going to rely on a front court of Joyce Edwards and Okot, then if UConn can make its shots, I mean, it kind of comes down to, in any game, if UConn shoots like it does for most of the season, then no one's beating them. But it's, if those shots aren't falling, then how is UConn gonna adjust and figure out a way through?
Yeah, exactly. I do think the thing that UConn has going for it, and it's the game too, is like it should have the two best players on the floor. Like, Sarah Strong and AZ Fudd should be the two best players on the floor. And when you get to this point in March, a lot of times that's the different ranker, right? And Joyce Edwards has been really good this season, but I still think those two have an edge. And that helps UConn in this regard. And it will help them if they get to win the championship game too. So I do think that's a big thing. And then just, like you said, if they make their shots, like if their offense looks like it has looked most of the season, I don't think anyone beats them. But if they struggle to make shots, then it becomes a harder game to win. And I think they've shown that they can win those games. In the last couple of games in the regional round, they've shown that they can win in many different ways, but it just becomes more difficult, and because the margin for error against a team like South Carolina is smaller, it's more of an uphill battle if the shots don't fall, especially if South Carolina's shots are falling.
Maybe they're going to make me look really bad on Friday night, but I do think that this team isn't going to befall a similar fate as the 17 and 18 Final Four teams, in that they just couldn't handle the big moment. And largely that's because Gino said he throws a lot at them in practice, and maybe they haven't faced a ton of adversity during the season until this past weekend, but he gives them a lot of adversity to face. And whatever he throws at them, it never really seems to phase them, and they kind of just, whatever the problem is at hand, they just go, all right, we can handle this, and they handle it. So I do feel better that we're not going to see them just come out and be wide-eyed under the bright lights. Gino even said he thinks that they might be better playing in the Final Four because it's such a challenge to get to that point that now it's just about playing basketball. So I don't know if that's something he really feels about his team or if that's him talking about something he is hoping that he sees. But either way, I think mentally they are going to be much more prepared for these games than those two other teams, because we're going to see that until they win it. That's the comparison you make, as well. Those two teams got to the Final Four undefeated and couldn't get the job done.
I think the other difference there too is, like, yes, you had Paige last year, but Sarah and AZ were focal points of that national championship team. Mm-hmm. Like, have had to be there and had the weight on their shoulders in those moments, where when you look at, like, those teams that lost it, like, they're the championship that they won, like, Fee and Lou's freshman year, like, that was Stewie Moe and Tuck. Like, yes, they were a part of it and they contributed to it, but you didn't have the weight of the world on your shoulders in those games, and that's a very different situation when now it's all on you. Whereas, like, for AZ and Sarah, this isn't that much different. Like, yeah, you had Paige last year, but it was still very much on the two of them as well.
Even Ashlyn, I know she might be a starter this year, wasn't a starter last year. I don't think they're really asking a whole lot more out of Ashlyn than they have in years past, simply because they've asked so much of her before on two previous Final Four teams. KK's a little bit different in that she hasn't been the point guard on any of these teams, but it's not like she's been some bit player that was riding the coattails of better players. Like, she's been relied on heavily, more her freshman year than last year, but this certainly isn't her first go around either. And Jana.
There's a lot of experience in these games on this roster.
What are you feeling going into this weekend? And let's hear a prediction for what you think unfolds.
I think had they, like, not struggled on offense like this past weekend, I would have been like, they're just like, there's no way they're not winning this thing. I feel a little more paused now, but I still think they're going to win it. I think they get by South Carolina. I don't think it's a blowout, but I think it's comfortable. I think it looks something like the games we saw this weekend, where maybe it's close at halftime, but then they're able to, in like a third or fourth quarter, create enough separation and win. And then I think they'll play Texas in the championship game, and I think it'll be a close game, but I think they'll win it.
I think what I'm leaning on, because I think I've just gotten to the point where I've been thinking about it way too much, and now I'm in the mode of, well, South Carolina's really good. Look at all they can do. This, that, and the other thing. Look at how good Texas is, how well they're playing. Is this finally Vic Schaefer's year? Is this UCLA's year? Because this would be UCLA's year in every single year that doesn't have this UConn team standing on the other side. I think what I'm leaning on in what I think is going to happen is, you look at the entire history of the program, and there are 2 years in which they were the best team in the country and they did not pull it off. And those were my first two full years on the beat. And we have, as we just discussed, there were very clear reasons why those teams didn't win. The other time they were undefeated and didn't win the national championship was 1997, I believe. And that wasn't just some loss in a vacuum. That was, I think, Shea Ralph tore her ACL in the first round against Louisville. And Gino has talked about, they basically walked around as if Shea died, and they were putting her initials on their sneakers. They were basically saying they were going to dedicate the tournament to her. And Gino said, like, I knew we were losing at that point. We had completely lost our edge. Like, 2001, yeah, that team probably should have won the national championship. They were also down Shea Ralph and Svetlana Brosimova, two very key pieces of that team. Should the rest of the team have been able to get it done? Maybe, but I really don't think that's a one-to-one comparison to this team. Then what else is there? Like 98, was that the year they lost to the 10 loss Tennessee team? I don't know if I can speak to that team as well, but you go on beyond that and the dark ages, they weren't good enough to win those years. Like 2008 when they lost to Stanford, they went and won back-to-back national titles after that. Like that team, as Gino said, was young and wasn't ready. Then Maya's senior year, were they the best team in the country? No, they were probably one of the best teams in the country, but they weren't clear like they were this year. 2011 or 2012, that team wasn't the best team in the country by any means. And in the time that I've been covering them, like the Page year, that team wasn't the best team in the country. The year after, they weren't. Then all the injuries hit. So that's a really long way of saying when UConn is the best team in the country at this point in the calendar, they get it done, except for two very large exceptions that happen in back-to-back years. So I think they're still going to win. I think South Carolina might be the tougher game for them because it's going to be their first time seeing a team like this. But as long as they just don't get punched in the face and go down 10-0, or they don't shoot, if their shooting percentage, their three-point percentage is in the 30s, I think they will be fine. As long as Sarah and AZ both don't end up in foul trouble, like as long as foul trouble is not an issue, I think they'll be fine. And like I would probably say the game goes similarly to the way you mentioned it. And I just also think it's Texas in the championship game. I think they're playing better. They're the one team that's beaten UCLA this year. But at the same time, did Texas peak too early? Did they peak a week too early? And now UCLA's been here before. I mean, they've both been here before and they both lost in the exact same round last year. So I don't know if that makes a difference. But I would predict Texas, but I'd predict them like 51-49, not in terms of score, in terms of like probability. I don't feel confident in that pick. And then I think whoever UConn plays in the championship game, I don't think it's a blowout the way that the two were last year, but I don't think it's particularly competitive. I think UConn goes up by 10 in the first half, and maybe they finish with a 15-point win, but the other team also never gets back within 10. And we'll find out this weekend. We get the pregames tomorrow, being Thursday. You're probably listening to this on Thursday. Take on South Carolina in the early game. A shocker in the early game. First time UConn's been in the early game, I think, since I've covered them, or at least since I've been at a Final Four. And we're in Phoenix, which is on essentially West Coast time. So this game is going to be done by, what is it, 6? Is it a 6 o'clock tip or is it a 7 o'clock tip?
It's 7 o'clock tip, Eastern. So yeah.
Okay, so it'd be
here, so.
Oh, I was right. Game's over by 6. Yeah. And then the championship game would be 12:30 local time. Very wild. But we'll see. Either way, we will be back Friday night for a rapid recap. And if UConn wins, we will do our best to have a interlude podcast. And then unlike last year, where somehow we didn't record after the national championship for a while, we will have, if they get to the national championship game, we will have, again, the rapid recap. If you haven't been listening, we're doing 5 minutes, under 10 minutes about the game right afterwards, get our thoughts out. And then if they do win the national championship, we'll have to make sure to really break that down in a full-length podcast, much more expeditiously than we did a year ago. But we'll both be here, boots on the ground, in this lovely weather that is Phoenix. We'll see how it goes. We'll either get our second national championship as reporters, or I will get to cover my third undefeated season that ends in the Final Four. So no stakes whatsoever. That'll do it from us. Thanks for listening.